yourself. Well, you're feeling alright. I'm not feeling so good myself.
You know, it's not easy coming up with appropriate music for a healthcare piece, but when we look at healthcare, it always seems that it's a who wins, who loses kind of battle. And that was kind of the point of Dave Mason's feeling all right, I'm not feeling too good myself. Most reform efforts in healthcare are defeated by opponents couching the proposed change in ways that make it sound like you'll lose something and somebody else is going to gain at your expense. For years, we rationed care by ability to pay. Along comes President Obama, finally pulling off a fairly significant reform after many, many years of people like me saying, you know, it's just not right that people go without access to health care in America. I'm Alan Jennings. I'm your host. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on listener-supported community public radio, WDIY. And by day, most nights, and just about every weekend for that matter, I'm the executive director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. Once a week, sometimes two, maybe even three times, or I should say once a month, WDIY gives me the opportunity to bring the public affairs issues that I think are important and pressing to the smartest listeners, radio listeners in the Lehigh Valley. Tonight, we're going to discuss the winners and losers in this new era with the guy at the top of the heap in the practical world of healthcare problem solving at the local level here in the Lehigh Valley. He is the CEO of the Lehigh Valley Health Network. Our lives are in his hands. He presides over the largest employer in the region. The network controls many, if not most, medical practices, and you probably don't even know his name. Well, he is Ron Swinford. He's a Vietnam veteran. He was raised in rural Missouri, still kind of sounds like it. He was educated in a one-room schoolhouse, at least in the first few years of his public education. He snuck out of rural Missouri and got some degrees at the universities of Missouri and Virginia. And always looks like he's never experienced stress. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Alan.
It's good to have you. And do you have any stress in your life?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Because I swear, Ron, you always have this kind of pleasant kind of thing going on, and you're a nice guy and everything, and I don't know how you pull it off. So,
I always subscribe to the adage, never let them see you sweat, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you pull that off pretty well, and I want to thank you on behalf of the citizens of the Lehigh Valley for working this as well as you do, and I also know that you've got a very cool wife. Her name is Sarah Wiesman, and one of the things that makes her really cool is that her father was the founder of Rednecks for Obama in Missouri, which is, does that implicate you in your politics at all?
Yes, it does implicate me, yes.
It does. Well, Sarah, I understand, is listening. Sarah, thanks for helping to bring Ron Swinford to the Lehigh Valley. I'm going to play a short segment of the President of the United States talking about the proposed medical reforms that eventually became known as Obamacare. And I want you to listen, and then we're going to talk about how much of this he's pulled off and how it's working and how it's not and how it's hurting you and how it's helping us and so on. So we got Ray Schwab in the studio. He's the guy that always makes sure that this works, right? Ray, thanks for being here as always, and why don't you hit that button and let's listen to the President of the United States.
Here are the details that every American needs to know about this plan. First, if you are among the hundreds of millions of Americans who already have health insurance, nothing in this plan will require you or your employer to change the coverage or the doctor you have. Under this plan, it will be against the law for insurance companies to deny you coverage because of a pre-existing condition. As soon as I sign this bill, it will be against the law for insurance companies to drop your coverage when you get sick or water it down when you need it the most. They will no longer be able to place some arbitrary cap on the amount of coverage you can receive in a given year or in a lifetime. We will place a limit on how much you can be charged for out-of-pocket expenses, because in the United States of America, no one should go broke because they get sick. And insurance companies will be required to cover, with no extra charge, routine checkups and preventive care, like mammograms and colonoscopies, because there's no reason we shouldn't be catching diseases like breast cancer and colon cancer before they get worse. If you lose your job or you change your job, you'll be able to get coverage. If you strike out on your own and start a small business, you'll be able to get coverage. We'll do this by creating a new insurance exchange, a marketplace where individuals and small businesses will be able to shop for health insurance at competitive prices. Now, for those individuals and small businesses who still can't afford the lower-priced insurance available in the exchange, we'll provide tax credits, the size of which will be based on your need. For those Americans who can't get insurance today because they have pre-existing medical conditions, we will immediately offer low-cost coverage that will protect you against financial ruin if you become seriously ill. This was a good idea when Senator John McCain proposed it in the campaign. It's a good idea now, and we should all embrace it. But an additional step we can take to keep insurance companies honest is by making a not-for-profit public option available in the insurance exchange. Let me be clear. It would only be an option for those who don't have insurance. No one would be forced to choose it. It would also keep pressure on private insurers to keep their policies affordable and treat their customers better. I will not sign a plan that adds one dime to our deficits, either now or in the future. We've estimated that most of this plan can be paid for by finding savings within the existing healthcare system, a system that is currently full of waste and abuse. The only thing this plan would eliminate is the hundreds of billions of dollars in waste and fraud, as well as unwarranted subsidies in Medicare that go to insurance companies. And we will also create an independent commission of doctors and medical experts charged with identifying more waste in the years ahead. These steps will ensure that you, America's seniors, get the benefits you've been promised. And we can use some of the savings to fill the gap in coverage that forces too many seniors to pay thousands of dollars a year out of their own pockets for prescription drugs. Many in this chamber, particularly on the Republican side of the aisle, have long insisted that reforming our medical malpractice laws can help bring down the costs of health care. I know that the Bush administration considered authorizing demonstration projects in individual states to test these ideas. I think it's a good idea, and I'm directing my Secretary of Health and Human Services to move forward on this initiative today. The time for bickering is over. The time for games has passed. Now is the season for action. Now is when we must bring the best ideas of both parties together and show the American people that we can still do what we were sent here to do. Now is the time to deliver on health care.
Ron Swinford, it all sounds so good. And, you know, this was a speech to Congress, obviously. You could almost, you know, tell which side of the room was on which side of the room.
Sure.
Ron Swinford, the CEO of Lehigh Valley Health Network, the person with undoubtedly the greatest burden, single burden, in the Lehigh Valley for implementing a lot of these measures. How close is the law to the things that, are the things that are in the law that was eventually signed going to be able to do the kinds of things that the president spoke about?
Well, with time, we think they will. It's a gargantuan law. And as we just heard the president's words, there's so many aspects to it in terms of insuring the uninsured, subsidizing those who can't afford insurance, and so forth. But we've begun that journey, and we think it's the right journey because for years we've heard how health care costs in this country are escalating, now 17-18% of the gross domestic product. So someone needed to throw a log in front of the runaway train here, and Obamacare is that attempt. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Does it have the right components? We believe it does. The medical profession that works on quality. The Institute for Healthcare Improvement, under Dr. Don Berwick, had espoused for years what was called the triple aim. The triple aim being we need to raise the quality of care in this country. That means reduced medical errors, reduced hospital-acquired conditions, and so forth, number one. Number two, do a better job of preventing illness. And in that way, what we would call population health, and reduce the cost of that. And so that triple aim is incorporated into the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, so-called Obamacare, or PPACA, as some people call it. And so those components are laudable. Who could argue with increasing quality at a lower cost and trying to prevent people from getting sick?
In the first place, correct.
And so the direction we need to go is clear. This is, I would admit, sort of a clumsy, awkward, groping attempt to get to that point. But it certainly is well-intended. We are on that journey. I could give you many specific examples of how we are trying to develop better population health. We provide, without expense to patients, education to type 2 diabetics at our 17th and CHU facility, educating them on what foods to eat and in what portions so that they often can lose weight and get completely off of diabetic medications. We get no reimbursement for that, but we know in the long run that works. And so the transition is from that old method of what was called fee-for-service. The more services we provide, the more we make money, if you will. And so you would hear complaints about, you know, overutilization, too many x-rays, too many lab tests, this, that, and the other. The transition is from that fee-for-service to a fee-for-value. And so insurance companies,
or outcomes,
including Medicare, Medicaid, the federal programs, now reward us. It's just a toe in the water, frankly. Now reward us in the 1 to 2% range of, if we can meet certain quality parameters, then we get a little more reimbursement. But the reimbursement is going to transition to this fee for value. And the greater the value, the fewer medical errors, the fewer complications when we see patients. Readmissions is a popular topic these days. It was in the morning call just this past week. All of these are ways to try to improve the quality of the care. And, of course, if we can get the population healthier, keep them out of the most expensive venue for healthcare delivery, the hospital, then the intents of Obamacare or PPACA will be met.
You know, this might be the most challenging show I've ever done because the number of angles that flow from just what you've said so far just go on endlessly. I wonder, you know, you're a smart guy, you're a physician, you can't get through medical school without being, you know, a 1500 SAT kind of guy. But you're surely not the guy that's figuring out, you know, the traps and the pitfalls and the disasters waiting. Who's doing that? Is that people you have in your own shop? Is that consultants that are outside the system? I mean, how are you navigating all of this?
It's the things you've mentioned, and of course, I and members of my executive team, who is an outstanding group, my chief operating officer, chief strategy officer, chief medical officer, chief financial officer, these are outstanding people. We all attend national conferences to hear from others where there have been successes, how to implement this in a way that in this new fee-for-value world, you can still make a margin. The cliche now, and I've heard this from other executives in the Valley, is that we are working toward being able to provide these services that we've traditionally provided at Medicare rates. Medicare rates don't cover all of our costs right now. So we work hard and have for the last 4 years to squeeze expense and costs out of our delivery system. And that's tens of millions of dollars that we've squeezed out so far. We're still busy doing that.
At some point, we're going to want to talk about the prevention versus, you know, fancy equipment kinds of stuff. But, you know, my impression is to date, you've never, you know, hospitals have never shied away from taking on the toughest healthcare challenges. Seems to me if your reimbursements are going to have something to do with outcomes, that means you're going to probably avoid the more difficult kinds of care that won't get you the kind of assurance of compensation.
Well, there will still be an accounting for the complexity of the illness that presents to our hospital. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, if you're dealing with the complex cases, you still will get a higher reimbursement than someone that just comes in with a sprained ankle or a broken leg. It will still be graduated based on the complexity of the illness. And, you know, at Lehigh Valley Health Network, we take care of some of the most complex. And, you know, our 18-bed burn unit being an example, our trauma program, and I could go on and on. But, you know, we specialize in that very complex care as well as the simple care. But we are moving to the outpatient environment. We are building ambulatory centers. Most recent one opened at Macungie. Have others on the drawing board in Bangor, in Penargill. And we, about 2 years ago, opened one at Mazellum Springs over in Berks County. More and more of that care needs to be delivered close to home so that we keep people out of that hospital environment where it is so costly to society, the payers, you and me.
You're listening to WDIY. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest tonight, my one and only guest, is Ron Swinford, the CEO of Lehigh Valley Health Network. It amazes me that he find the time and with all the burdens in his life to come join us and talk to the smartest listeners in radio in the Lehigh Valley about what's going on in healthcare. So winners and losers. Who are the the winners? It would seem to me are pretty obvious. There were 40 million plus Americans who just unconscionably were denied or didn't have health insurance, and because of that, their access to care was going to be different, at least, and probably not as well, and in some cases, not at all. So the presumption is they're the winners. What other winners and losers do you think are there on the balance sheet on this?
Well, as you might guess, the medical device companies, the insurance companies also are undergoing the same sort of revolution that we as healthcare providers are undergoing. And there will be winners and losers in that because the insurance company has had to redesign itself. It will now be appealing directly to the consumer. Recently, one of the Blue Cross plans opened a storefront operation over at the Promenade not far from here. And so
interesting that it wasn't on 7th Street in Allentown.
it will happen.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
Because, you know, the real big starting gun for the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act is January 1st of 2014. And all of our preparations have been in anticipation of that. But I think you will see it in 7th Street in downtown Allentown.
What are you doing to mitigate the dangers to the network of what's coming and what's already here?
It's a challenge. It really is. Our employees work very hard every day. I consider my greatest responsibility is to protect their jobs. If tomorrow you flip the switch and we were so successful that we prevented illness, we took care of it at these ambulatory environments, and I needed half the inpatient beds that are presently at Muhlenberg and Cedar Crest facilities. It'll take some real tight navigation to be sure that we also look out for our employees and redeploy them to the site where care needs to be delivered in the future.
There's so much to talk about on this. We're gonna move on to the next segment. We're gonna talk about some issues that aren't getting enough attention, but I think we're gonna have to come back to this a little bit more. But in my judgment, one of the really serious unmet healthcare needs in Lehigh Valley is behavioral health, drug and alcohol addiction, mental illness. We'll talk about that and so much more. Stick around. This is WDIY. We're glad you're listening.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. I can't got
You're listening to WDIY, Community Public Radio for the Lehigh Valley. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
Chance I can get to use Quadrophenia by The Who, I'm going to grab. And, you know, obviously Quadrophenia was about a troubled teenager in England. But, you know, I think our society has gotten so much more understanding of the complexities of behavioral health. I mean, they used to be seen as individual weaknesses. I think people are starting to understand that they more so much more often than not, they are genetically passed on. My father was an alcoholic, and I knew that that I was going to be susceptible. Thankfully, I've stayed clean. But drug and alcohol abuse is the kind of thing that's often passed on. Mental illness is the kind of thing that's often passed on. But there's also stimulation in the economy that does this. You know, you lose a job, you feel down about yourself, you lose your self-esteem, you get depressed, and before you know it, you're not really employable anymore. And the Lehigh Valley has a terribly inadequate mental health and drug and alcohol system. There's a limited number of inpatient beds for people with drug or alcohol addiction problems. Detox, we're finally getting a detox unit in the Lehigh Valley. That's been long overdue. Care for juveniles is pretty limited. Anytime I've said to anybody in the Lehigh Valley, we've got serious inadequacies in our behavioral health care system, people knowingly nod their heads, if not jump up and down in agreement. So Ron Swinford, the guy that runs the biggest health care system in Lehigh Valley, you've got a fair amount of behavioral health services. I need to try to get you and your peers to pay more attention to it, because I don't think we're anywhere close. But just your thoughts about behavioral health in the Lehigh Valley and how good or how bad it is.
Well, if I could pick up on our conversation about the Affordable Care Act, we are changing the way we are approaching mental health as a result. So that, as I discussed, pushing care to the ambulatory environment, trying to prevent illness and hospitalization. I would like to think that, you know, we have a 65-bed inpatient unit at our Muhlenberg campus. I'd like to see us need half that number of beds because we get to the patient sooner. How are we doing that? As a response to the Affordable Care Act, we now have mental health professionals working with our outpatient practices. I'm just talking about general medical practices, not psychiatry clinics or mental health clinics. You know as well as I do, patients with early mental illness often resist being sent to a mental health professional. So we have social workers and mental health professionals working in community care teams assigned to specific practices.
So I walk into the Trexler Town facility,
right,
and I display signs of issues. You have people there who...
We do now.
And, no kidding.
And even more important than
Way
that,
to go.
More important than that is what we are asked to take greater risk under the Affordable Care Act. By greater risk, I mean we're caring for a larger and larger population. If you're doing that, like the insurance companies do that, we have to identify those people that have the most complex illness and manage them more tightly. So these community care teams consist of a case manager, a nurse, and a mental health professional. And they help connect people up with the right services to keep them healthy. And so your general medical practitioner identifies that there's some mental illness complicating your physical health problems. If you think about it for a moment, and we found this out with the 5% most high utilizers of services, what we found out is that if you have a chronic physical condition, it often leads to mental health complications, depression,
right,
anxiety, and so forth. If you have a mental health problem, you may not be very good at caring for your physical being and not care for your diabetes or let yourself get so obese that it's unmanageable. So intervening early in those is a form of this prevention that we were talking about under the Affordable Care Act. And so we are developing these community care teams assigned to our practices to identify this earlier, intervene earlier, and help those people with physical illness that have mental health complications and those patients with primary mental health disease that don't know how to care for themselves physically.
And what precipitated this? Is this something that you guys did? It has nothing to do with Obamacare, I'm assuming.
It does to an extent.
It does.
Because we have to identify those people that are most expensive to care for. And often that's the patient that doesn't know how to care for themselves and lets themselves deteriorate to such an extent that they show up in our emergency room. And they may be in such a deteriorated condition that they need inpatient services, hence the most costly site for us to provide the service.
When I've talked to you about this, for our listeners, the first time I met Ron Swinford, he said mental and dental. 'Cause somebody told him, keep an eye out for Jennings. He's going to bug you about dental issues and about mental health. And sure enough, I did, and I do. You have not argued with me about the weaknesses in behavioral health services in the Lehigh Valley. So I'm assuming that's because you have, you know, better evidence than I do. It's probably epidemiological in nature. What kinds of things do you have plans that you're working on now that so I can stop bugging you about some of this stuff?
Well, I won't use...
I'm sure you're not motivated by keeping me from bugging you, but...
I won't use the singular pronoun I. I will use the plural pronoun we. We, the providers of the Valley, and I'm talking about the not-for-profit providers in the Valley, St. Luke's University Health Network, Lehigh Valley Health Network, Sacred Heart Hospital, Good Shepherd Rehabilitation Hospital. We work together to do a community needs assessment as required by the Internal Revenue Service to justify our not-for-profit status. And one of the needs that is being identified is mental health needs. We will be required, in order to sustain our not-for-profit status, we will be required to address the needs identified in that survey. And that survey is publicly available now and was subsidized through the Dorothy Ryder Pool Healthcare Trust.
And is there a go date and a finish date? I mean, what kind of pressure do you have on you to produce any kind of services or results?
Probably once the IRS begins to review these, which doesn't occur until next fiscal year, it'll be on an annual basis. Those will be reviewed. That's not our motivation to develop these mental health professionals that work in the ambulatory environment. That was more motivated through the Affordable Care Act.
Okay. Let's go back to the Affordable Care Act. The conventional wisdom is that the complexities, the challenges, the reimbursement changes and so on are going to make it difficult for any healthcare system under $3 billion, and I think that's $3 billion annual operating budget, will have difficulty surviving this new world. Your system is $1 billion plus, which is mind-boggling to me. But if you added St. Luke's, Good Shepherd, and Sacred Heart, we still wouldn't get to $3 billion.
Correct.
How do you survive if you're not a $3 billion institution?
Well, part of that $3 billion figure comes from the risk-taking that we're talking about, that in order to care for a population, you need to have a sufficiently large number of patients that you can spread the risk. With the Affordable Care Act, we're taking on a larger number of patients. That means we're taking on a larger risk. If you have a small population, let's say you're trying to cover 10,000 lives, one of those patients develops a serious malignancy, needs a bone marrow transplant, has lots of infections, perhaps has complications of the immunosuppressive drugs they're taking and so forth, that alone can sink the economics of providing for that size of population. That's where that $3 billion figure comes from. So we need to partner with others, and it doesn't mean that we merge. It doesn't mean that we consolidate.
That was going to be my next question. Who should we be watching?
Well, we couldn't do that with St. Luke's, even if Mr. Anderson and I wished to do that, because the Federal Trade Commission would usually, the trigger is around 60% market share. And together, we and St. Luke's would be in the low 80% market share. Mm. So it certainly would, the FTC would never allow us to merge. But we can work with those outside of our region in developing what I call the new intellectual assets and competencies for the Affordable Care Act. That means, how do we care for a population of this size? How do we provide these services and be proactive in taking this risk and lowering the cost across a population of the health expenses that we're incurring currently?
Well, let's go back a little bit and talk about how the heck you figure this stuff out. You went to University of Missouri for undergraduate or for a medical degree?
Both.
And Virginia?
Internal medicine.
So you're an internist.
I'm an internist, and then I did specialty training in dermatology.
Masters in healthcare administration, any of that kind of stuff?
No.
I just, you know, this just blows me away.
Well, and you know, I would say I'm from the school of hard knocks. I've had really great mentors. Dr. Lester Bryant was the dean at the University of Missouri when I was there as the chief of medicine. And he helped me develop by giving me many opportunities in administration. And so I could give you more titles than we have time here this evening that Dr. Bryant allowed me, and it helped me develop some of the competencies necessary to do what I do today.
So you're talking to Penn about, it seems to me that there'd almost need to be a race between you and Rick Anderson over who gets the best, you know, partner relationships outside the region, because you're not going to be one.
No, we're not going to be one. We couldn't.
Right.
And I guess you could see it that way, but I think we're not talking about the delivery of services so much as we are developing these intellectual assets, these new competencies to implement the Affordable Care Act, to raise quality, lower costs. That's the name of the game. And the healthier you can keep the population, the better opportunity you have to lower costs and raise quality.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest tonight is Dr. Ron Swinford, the CEO of Lehigh Valley Health Network. And Ron, I'm grateful to you for taking time from the pressures of your world to come be on the show with me. We talked about mental health. We talked about drug and alcohol addiction, issues that are just extraordinarily significant in the world that I am in. Lots of people who are poor because of their health care problems. They're poor because of their behavioral health issues. And the vast majority of the time, it has nothing to do with their own behavior. It might have something to do with the way they were raised. It might have something to do with lifestyle kinds of things, but, you know, it's not like this is, you know, irresponsible behavior overall. There are undoubtedly other unmet health care needs that I don't know about. Are there other issues that you and the hospital are working on now to address that people ought to know about?
Well, many of these were identified in this health needs assessment that we participated in through the Pool Trust and the other not-for-profits. And so they're not much different than what you've referred to here, Alan, including the mental health needs in this community. But, you know, lowering risk of cardiovascular disease by weight control, addressing the obesity epidemic, less smoking, less excessive alcohol consumption, the usual things that are, you know, you almost alluded to them in introducing the question, that people participate in. And sometimes they need that, what we would call a health navigator, to help them. You know, we have at our 17th Street site, we have what are called promotoras. These are Hispanic guides for health. So that, for example, if a 15-year-old in Allentown High School becomes pregnant, and 15-year-olds that become pregnant may not be the most consistent in following up on their prenatal visits and so forth. Right. These promotoras keep track of them. They don't show up for the appointment. They call them. They go knock on their door, say, hey, we need to protect your baby. We want to make sure that this goes well. And it is part of this approach to Affordable Care Act that says we have to be more proactive in helping people stay healthy, teaching them how to stay healthy, and keeping them on the course, whether it's making sure they eat right for diabetes, whether they follow up with their obstetrician if they're high-risk pregnancy, and so on and so forth. All of these.
You know, I've got to tell you, that's significant progress to hear you talk about the language issue. I was in the hospital visiting my mother several years ago, and the woman in the bed next to her was Latina. Almost no English fluency at all, and she couldn't talk to her doctor. And the hospital got somebody from the housekeeping staff to come interpret, which really made the woman in the bed upset, and I was shocked by it. It sounds to me, this might have been more like 7 or 8 years ago, but it sounds to me like you've made some serious progress on the language issues that we have to deal with. You know, it doesn't do anybody. You can say all you want, learn the language, but you know, if they don't, that's still a healthcare problem we've got to address.
Well, one of the things that we've learned since that event that you described is helping people when they come to the doctor that English is not their first language isn't just a matter of language translation. It's cultural. Because illness is different in every culture.
Right.
So two examples of what we do now for patients for whom English is not their first language. One is we have a interpretive service that can be accessed 24/7. And
it's kind of like 15 plus languages.
It's actually 87, I think.
Oh, jeez.
And we see more than 5 dozen languages in the course of a year within Lehigh Valley Health Network.
Wow.
And so we are able to get that translation through a service out of Texas. And number two is that we hire preferentially at 17th and Chew Street, we hire preferentially Latinos, Hispanic heritage, because we know they understand the cultural impact and consequences of illness better than those who don't come from that culture. And so more than 60% of our employees there are of Hispanic origin. And
let's go to what might be a little bit of a sensitive issue. When somebody like me, you know, my anti-poverty nonprofit is a $20 million organization, a little tiny scratch on the screen relative to Lehigh Valley Health Network. Your annual budget, your annual year-end surpluses run in the $40 to $80 million range. Any person worth their salt, understanding business, knows that, you know, an $80 million surplus really isn't that much when you're talking about a $1 billion institution, because it wouldn't take much for that $80 million to go $80 million in the wrong direction. But it would also seem to me that, you know, if you had an $80 million surplus this year, you could take $20 million of it and put it into, you know, endowing some kind of a fund for behavioral health services and put that to good use. Is that something that would be on your screen?
Well, rather than putting it in the endowment, we would expand the services that we currently have.
But some of those should be community-based.
Well, and some of ours are. I mean, we work with the Rescue Mission downtown. One of our psychiatrists goes there weekly and takes care of the men that end up at the rescue mission. We work.
You have a clinic at the Sixth Street Shelter with
yes,
us.
Yes, a Sixth Street Shelter, the veterans' home. We work with them also and their mental health needs. So we use those resources and plow them back into the community, as well as, you know, equipment replacement and expansion where necessary. A new CT scanner goes for much more than $1 million. And
wow.
So
you're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest tonight, Ron Swinford, the CEO of Lehigh Valley Health Network. We've got plenty more to talk about. We're going to take a quick break. Stick around. Come back.
Hey, it's us, Click and Clack from Car Talk. Is your car so environmentally incorrect that it creates its own ecosystem?
Donate it through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
This station gets the proceeds and you get a tax break.
To find out more, call 866-789-8627.
Car Talk airs Friday night at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 10 a.m. For more information, visit our website at wdiy.org.
Working our way up here from incredibly depressing Neil Young's Don't Let It Bring You Down to, maybe some days are better than others. Maybe by the time this is over, we'll get to the happy stuff. Charitable care. You guys are in the couple hundreds of millions of dollars, I think.
Right.
There's a lot of, issues related to how we define charitable care. I think the biggest ticket in your charitable care report is the difference between what it costs for you to provide a service and what Medicaid or even Medicare will reimburse you. So that means there's a shifting of costs someplace for you to be able to do that, because you're obviously making a profit off of something. I'm assuming that's the private insurance. How is that going to affect, how is that going to change with Obamacare?
Well, it's a really good question, and one that was hot on the internet today in my world of healthcare.
Oh, really?
Because...
I'll deny I had anything to do with that.
Yeah, okay. In some of the states... they were using as an example an experiment that occurred in Massachusetts a few years ago. Not the current one that seems to be quite successful, but one that Harvard implemented in trying to adjust the expense they were incurring for health insurance for their employees. And what they found is that as they began to fiddle with that and adjust and change the plan.
Did you just say fiddle?
I said fiddle.
Is that a Missouri word?
That's a Missouri word.
Medical terminology?
That's a Missouri word. Yeah.
Okay.
As they began to mess with that a bit, they found that the really healthy people, and this is a concern about the trap of the Affordable Care Act, healthy people will simply say, well, you know, I'm 23. I've never had any health issues. As far as I know, I exercise. I'm normal weight. I don't smoke. Don't drink in moderation, et cetera.
Don't jump out of airplanes.
Yeah, that might be a good idea. And so if those people don't sign up, again, spreading the risk, and only the sickest people sign up, then we will have a problem with the Affordable Care Act. That's why a penalty was built in if you don't purchase any insurance. Now, that penalty is very small right now. Will probably need to be increased because the funds from the penalty will then in turn be used to do this cross-subsidization for people with illness.
And I think that that concept of requiring insurance was actually, wasn't that a Newt Gingrich initiative?
I think it was initially, yes.
It's funny to watch the politics, the, you know, most of Obama's proposals, just as a quick aside, most of Obama's proposals appear to be a hybrid between Mitt Romney, Massachusetts, some degree of Newt Gingrich, and Richard Nixon. So how did it come to be that Nixon, Romney, and Gingrich are socialists?
You know? Well, you are dragging me into a political discussion, well, aren't you?
I couldn't help but make the point that, but I mean, those are market issues. You know, if you don't have, you know, people getting insurance, you've got to shift those costs. I mean, you know, it doesn't work. So,
well, while not professing that the Affordable Care Act is perfect, it certainly is not. It's at least a major initiative to attempt to raise the quality, lower the cost of care in this country, and keep people healthier with the prevention that we've discussed.
Right. Competition. I don't get it. I was at a session recently with one of the other hospitals, and one of the people, they were asking the views of some of us who know a little bit about what's going on in the community about, you know, the future of healthcare and philanthropy and so on. And one of the philanthropists present really went off on the competition issue between the two hospitals. And, you know, I get the concept of competition. You want to be better than everybody else. It pushes you to be the best that you can be. I get that. And I'm for that. I've tried to push my kids to be vicious competitors and win everything that they could. Never let my kids win a game because I didn't believe in it. But how is competition really, when it comes right down to it, good, as opposed to a more planned, collaborative type of approach to providing health care?
Well, I agree with most of your comments. And just in case my prior comments make me sound like a socialist, I'm more of a capitalist. We have to run our network as a business. We have to be responsible business persons in order to have the margin to which you referred earlier and give back to the community and do the replacement and build new ambulatory
centers. But the reimbursement system forces you to do that. Competition doesn't force you to do that.
It doesn't. Mr. Anderson and I have agreed that we are in a situation of co-opetition, and we do some cooperative and collaborative work together. At the same time, we necessarily have to compete. Frankly, the Federal Trade Commission would come after us if we were too collaborative and too cooperative. It would not be allowed.
You're governed by the FTC.
That's the regulatory agency of the federal government.
But there used to be healthcare cost containment councils that forced you to be more collaborative. No?
Well, I mean, they don't exist now. And right now there's a little bit of a dichotomy that's going on. We talked earlier about needing to have a $3 billion or more base in order to spread this risk, learn these new competencies, do population health and so forth. And so we need to cooperate with others. We can't do it in an adjacent market. That's why St. Luke's and Lehigh Valley Health Network would not be allowed to do it. So we have the need to do that consolidation. So we have to get outside of our primary service area in order to find our partners. You made reference to a Philadelphia market.
Right.
That would be one that would be a candidate. But, you know, there's others around us.
I got to tell you, I think I finally lost it over this issue of competition when I saw a billboard from a different, not you guys, a different provider in the area, advertising emergency response, including Medivac. And it is unimaginable to me that I would be splayed out on the middle of a highway, half dead, and to have the helicopter pull up to haul me away and save my life, and for me to object because it's not the helicopter that I want that's been advertised. And what's the benefit of advertising emergency medical response? Is that a profit center emergency?
I believe the better part of valor would be to duck this question.
Fair enough. I'm one of those guys that dwells on the dark side of life, you know, all the down stuff. There's got to be great news coming out of Lehigh Valley Health Network, and for that matter, the healthcare system in general. Let's talk for a few minutes about what's coming that people should be excited about or people should be, thankful for.
Well, some of those I've alluded to earlier in terms of what we do at our 17th Street site. I'm so proud of that. And when we offer tours there to Mayor Pulaski, area legislators and so forth, they feel it. The people that work at 17th Street have a passion for what they do and the population that they serve that is palpable and inspirational. And we have many services at that site that are appropriate for the community. Our Center for Women's Medicine, our clinics. We serve over 40,000 children's visits per year at our children's clinic there. We just renovated that, and partly through the help of a state grant, our area legislators helped support. We have an AIDS activity office to serve those with HIV positive, that are HIV positive. We have a center for healthy aging there. We, of course, have an emergency department there when necessary. Lots of services there. A lot of the local community are employed there, and so culturally it's very compatible. I'm proud of the progress we have made to date on moving to the Affordable Care Act tenants, and that is the population health, the preventive medicine, the education we're providing patients at no reimbursement to us. That's an expense to us, but we know in the long run. One of our stresses right now is that we're caught in a transition so that we are still being paid principally by fee for service. But at the same time, our relationship with some of the payers, I'll use Highmark Blue Cross as an example, they set quality parameters. And if we can hit those quality parameters, they give us additional reward or reimbursement because we are providing care at such a high level. This past year, we received an additional, brace yourself, Alan, $6.2 million from Highmark Blue Cross because we hit every one of the parameters.
What are you doing with the $6.2 million? Can I have any of it?
We'll talk later. but it is this transition that's difficult. This year, frankly, many employers change their insurance plans to have higher copays, higher deductibles in response partly to the Affordable Care Act, but also because it's less expensive for them to insure their employees if they raise the deductibles and copays. As a result of that, some people pulled back from seeking care. So honestly, our admissions slowed down from the 1st of January through June, the end of our fiscal year. Some of that's picked back up now, but it is the uncertainty in the market right now that concerns me most. And if they make too many adjustments to the Affordable Care Act as it was originally proposed, and we heard from the president earlier, then every time they change that, we have to readjust. And turning a $1.6 billion corporation organization is not easy.
Yeah, I get
it. And so it complicates it.
Our agency, excuse me, is the agency that bears really the greatest part of the burden of trying to rescue people from foreclosure. You've heard people say that the United States is the only country in the world where people lose their homes because of their health care problems. And the reason you can say that, of course, is that the rest of the modern world has access to health care. In the face of this economy, was there anything that you've done differently in how you do collections in order to try to absorb or mitigate some of that?
we've always had a pretty generous policy in that regard, and so that if you are, if your family's income is at four times the poverty level, your care essentially is free.
Four times, wow, that's...
And that's for a family of four. And so we've always done that. We do financial counseling in the at the depths of the current recession in 2008-2009. We're one of the few health systems in the United States that advertised in both English and Spanish locally that said, just because of the economy, do not neglect your health. Come, you know, a diabetic that thought they could not afford their insulin could get themselves into deep trouble and then require hospitalization. Not good for them or us. So we have been fairly proactive about that, and when we've compared our indigent care policy to those around the country, ours is really more generous than most.
Let's talk about Lehigh Valley Hospital and Health Network as an economic creature. I mean, you happen to be in the business of providing health care, but you're also the largest employer in Lehigh Valley. It's hard to swing a dead cat by its tail and not hit a Lehigh Valley Health Network facility. The impact of the hospital from an economic development perspective has got to be huge. The vendors that sell you products and services, the contractors that install your HVAC, the general contractors that build the buildings. Have you ever measured the impact of the hospital beyond the health elements of it?
Well, we haven't recently. I think many years ago we did, and it's a factor that several times our gross revenues, and I've already referred to our gross revenues being $1.6 billion. So we know the impact in the community is very sizable in all the areas that you've mentioned and many more. Just the disposable income that can result and what happens with retail stores and so forth, it's quite large. But we have not assessed that in recent time.
Docs, I can't imagine. I mean, talk about herding cats. Docs were demigods. And, you know, the pedestal's been knocked down pretty good over the last, you know, number of years as reimbursements have declined. Doctors becoming employees of hospital healthcare systems. Is that a tiger by the tail? How do you manage medical practices where you've got people who, you know, were at the top of the totem pole and now are just regular employees of the hospital?
Well, for one, you remind physicians of the calling that made them want to apply to medical school. And that is the altruism in their heart, the empathy they have for caring for patients. Those are the physicians that we seek and attempt to recruit. We employ over 600 of the physicians on our medical staff of about 1,200. And we work with the physicians help us on this journey to the new paradigm of healthcare delivery, help us with cost control, help us with raising the quality, and participate with us. It is a different world. It is a new paradigm, and it's different from the doctors of yesteryear when, you know, they were so independent and they were running their own businesses. With all the regulation, with all the accounting we have to do to insurance companies, to Medicare, to Medicaid, to other federal agencies, that infrastructure is impossible in a physician's office. And
so you're adding value in the sense that they can practice and you guys handle the reimbursements and the business of the business.
We think that's the case. And of course, you've alluded to the cliche about herding cats, but physicians have more in their hearts than you realize. And to remind them and to appeal to that and us work together is something that is actually inspirational.
Ron Swinford, CEO of Lehigh Valley Health Network, thanks for coming on the radio show and taking the time to help us talk about the tough issues of our time, and thanks for the good work you do in Lehigh Valley.
Thank you very much, Alan.
That's Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'll be back next month. Stick around for an upbeat song to end the night. Ray Schwab, thanks for your help.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got to hear. Nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got you. Sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got you.
You're listening to WDIY in Allentown, 88.1 FM and HD, listener-supported community public radio. Stay tuned for Celtic Fair with your host, Rick Weaver.